I want to welcome all of you to our first Peer Training Network call of 2008. Doesn't seem possible we're already in 2008. I'm Susan Kanak from the National Resource Center for Organizational Improvement at the Muskie School here in Portland, Maine, and I'm so glad you could join our call today. The Peer Training Network is comprised of people who are engaged in some aspect of child welfare training. Some members are trainers, some are curriculum writers, some manage training, some people are academics, many do a little bit of everything. Network participants are folks who are interested in learning from each other, sharing ideas and materials, and joining discussions on various child welfare training topics. This network offers many opportunities for you to connect with child welfare training experts across the country, people who share your interest in improving the lives of children and families through effective training. I'm honored to be part of this peer training network, and I hope you are also. So welcome. Our call today is about recruitment and realistic job previews. I'm really pleased that we have with us Michelle Graff, who I'll introduce in a couple of minutes formally to start our discussion. Before, however, we get into the topic of the day, let's do another roll call so everybody knows quickly who is on the phone, because I think from the folks that said hello a couple of minutes ago, we've got folks from all over the country, and this is great. So, I'm Susan Kanak, and with me is...
This is Maureen Baker, also with the Resource Center. Nice to see you all.
Yeah. So let me go through the people I think are on the call, and if you could just say hi and give us your name and the agency you represent, that would be wonderful. Gretchen, let's start with you.
Okay, I'm Gretchen Robbins, and I'm with the Child Welfare Training Institute of the Muskie School in University of Southern Maine.
Gretchen's right up the road from us, and we rarely see her, so it's always good to hear her voice.
I have Frida with me, so I'll let her introduce herself.
Good.
Hi, Frida Benatovich, also with CWTI and the Muskie School.
Welcome, Frida. Glad you could join the call. Heather?
Hi, this is Heather Stone, the Director of Child Welfare Training and Organizational Development for the Department of Human Resources in Maryland.
Thanks, Heather. Glad you could be with us today.
Thanks.
John Rubin? John, are you still on the call?
Oh, sorry about that. Yep.
Okay. Do you want to introduce yourself?
This is, John Rubin from Pennsylvania Child Welfare Training Program. I had my mute button on so that no noises here bothered anybody else, and I didn't realize you couldn't hear me introducing myself the first time.
Yes, we were talking about that earlier in the call, that I rarely use a mute button because I tend to talk for about 3 or 4 minutes when no one's heard me. So thank you for admitting up front my biggest fear.
Yep.
And Calvin, would you like to introduce yourself also?
Yes, my name's Calvin Kolick, and I also work with John Rubin at the Pennsylvania Child Welfare Training Program. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you with us.
Thank you.
Michelle Wilson?
Yes, my name is Michelle Wilson. I'm the training coordinator with the Boise State School Social Work Child Welfare Center, and we do contract training for new workers for the State of Idaho Health and Welfare Department.
I'm delighted you're with us today, Michelle.
Thank you.
Megan?
Hi, this is Megan Paul. I'm from the University of Nebraska Center on Children, Families, and the Law.
Glad you could be with us.
Thanks.
Kay?
My name is Kay Osborne, and I manage the Child Welfare Training Program for the Department of Child Services in Indiana.
I'm so pleased you could be with us today, Kay. Margie?
Hello, this is Margie Porman from the Iowa Department of Human Services Training. And Jan?
Bernard from training, too.
Welcome. Welcome. Leslie?
Okay, this is Leslie Biddleston. I am the statewide training coordinator for Child and Family Services in Nevada.
Excellent. And Reba?
I'm Reba Nissen. I'm the mentor program coordinator on our professional development team for the Division of Child and Family Services in Salt Lake City, Utah.
It's good to hear your voice, Reba. It's been a while.
Yeah. Great to be here.
Has anyone else joined our call that hasn't introduced themselves yet?
Yeah, my name is Greg Castilla, and I'm the Academy Supervisor for Children's Academy in Seattle.
Greg, a voice from the past. How nice to hear your voice. Welcome.
Thank you.
And this is Troy Lakey from Portland State University's Child Welfare Partnership.
Hi, Troy.
How are you?
Glad to have you with us.
Thank you.
This is Charmaine Britton from the Butler Institute for Families at the University of Denver.
Hi, Charmaine. Welcome.
Hi, Susan.
Samantha from New Partnership at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay.
Hi, Samantha. Glad to have someone from Wisconsin with us.
And here's another person from Wisconsin. I'm Julie Brown from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee and the Bureau of Milwaukee Child Welfare.
Julie, good to hear your voice.
Yours as well.
And Susan, this is Cindy Perry from Montana, where it's now finally above zero.
Hi, Cindy. I think you've got the coldest temperature of anybody. I'm glad you're here. We'll tell jokes to keep you warm.
Okay.
In Green Bay, we're at about negative 40 right now.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Okay. Green Bay wins.
Oh, dear. Okay, nothing we can do about that. Anyone else who wants to introduce themselves at this point?
Yes, hi. I'm Sarah Williams. I'm from the University Training Consortium in Kentucky. Steve Fox had asked that I try to participate for a little while. I work with the PCWCP program, and that's the Public Child Welfare Certification Program. I'm not sure if you're all familiar with that or not, but Steve asked if I could sit in on this.
I am familiar with that program, Sarah. This is Susan, and I'm very glad you could be on our call today, and please give Steve my best.
I sure will.
Anyone else? Okay, more people might join us, as I've said repeatedly. Because we are taping this call, I ask that there be no entrance or exit tones, letting me know when other people have joined the call, because I think once our presentation starts, we're not going to want to be distracted by beeping. So if anyone else joins us or has joined us, I'm glad you're here, and enjoy the call. Okay, let's get into today's topic, recruitment and realistic job preview. This is a sort of an unusual topic for the Peer Training Network to be taking on, and it came up during our last call when we had Dr. Anita Barbie on the call talking with us about training evaluation. And one of the many points she made to us during that call was that there's really a lot of work that needs to be done to get your staff ready to come to training, and that recruiting, selecting, and hiring the right, and I'm sitting here making quote marks in the air, people is a critical component of having a stable, competent workforce. And so we got talking a little bit on that call about realistic job previews and recruitment strategies, and it became an interest of people in this group to learn a little bit more about recruitment and realistic job previews. And right after that call was completed, within a couple of days, I heard from Michelle Graff, who said, hey, this is an area that I really love to talk about, and I have some, Michelle being very humble, some knowledge in this area. Would you like me to help you put your call together? And I was delighted because this is an area that I know very little about, and I'm really looking to Michelle and other folks on this call who have had more experience in this area to provide some education to us all and give us the opportunity to discuss recruitment and realistic job previews. So that's why we're on a, I guess, training-related topic today. It came up at the last call, and there seemed to be great interest in the call, and I know several people wanted to be on the call and cannot because of other commitments, and that's why we are taping the call. The audio files for this call will be available on the Resource Center website, and I'll give you that address within a week to, well, probably 5 days to a week is what they tell me. So if you want to, you can go download those files. So anyways, with that as a background, let me introduce Michelle, because we certainly are fortunate to have her join our call today. Dr. Michelle Graff is a research associate professor at the University of Nebraska's Center on Children, Families, and the Law. She is trained as an industrial organizational psychologist and has worked with public child welfare agencies for the last 15 years. Her areas of expertise are in the design, implementation, and evaluation of child welfare human resource management strategies for competency modeling, staff recruitment, selection, and retention, training needs assessment and evaluation, and performance evaluation. In 1998, her team produced the first realistic job preview video for Child Protective Services for the Nebraska Department of Health and Human Services. And I know many of you know Michelle and have had the opportunity to work with her over the years. She is an active member of this peer training network and is always very generous about sharing her expertise and materials. So please join me in welcoming her here today. And let me turn the call right over to her. Michelle?
Thanks, Susan. I decided to go with the hands-free mute option, but I want to make sure that you can all hear me. Do I have it on?
Yes, you're coming through loud and clear here in Maine.
Revealing my technological inadequacy with the phone. Thank you. That's a very humbling sort of introduction, and I'm really thrilled to have the opportunity to talk to people. There are a number of folks on the call who know me and know that I get kind of excited about this topic. It's one that we've been working with for 10 years now, and I've done whatever I can to kind of proselytize around the country over the years. And so some of you have heard some of this maybe more than once, and I would ask you to join in. I know there's some folks on the call who have developed RJPs, and so I'm going to try very hard to keep my comments brief, and I think Susan and I would both like to have it be a discussion and sharing, so it's not just going to be Michelle yapping at you for an hour and a half. I did have a handout, and I'm hoping everybody had a chance to get that and pull that down. I like to frame it as frequently asked questions, because I truly get a lot of calls. I've gotten a lot of calls over the last 10 years from folks all across the country, and it tends to be these kinds of questions. And so I find this kind of a handout, this handout format handy for situations where maybe you're in the position of having to advocate with decision makers to consider a new intervention such as an RJP. I think this kind of a format maybe can speak to them in a way that might be hard to pull together from a PowerPoint presentation. So I hope it's helpful to you in your work if you find yourself in that kind of situation. I'm going to speak sort of from that and sort of from some other things, but really the bulk of anything important that I have to say is probably on the handout, so you can probably not worry about taking big notes. I wanted to start out by trying to differentiate what is and what isn't an RJP, because I think what I've been seeing over the last at least 5 or 6 years is there's some confusion, and not just in child welfare, also in my field, industrial organizational psychology, that folks call things an RJP and they really aren't technically an RJP. Here we're talking about a recruitment strategy where we're providing applicants with balanced information about the job. It's a persuasive communication. We're trying to change attitudes or perceptions about the job or about the organization. It's a departure from a traditional recruitment method because we are telling people the good and the bad. We're not just selling people on here's what's so great about this place as a place to work, but we're actually telling them, you know, hey, and there's some things, some negatives that you need to be aware of and that you need to carefully consider before you come and work here. So it's a little different twist. Some organizations may have some difficulty with that, and as we'll see, you know, as I talk a little bit more about development, we encountered a lot of difficulty when we tried to find a video contractor to help us develop this, because they didn't get that concept that there was a balance there of positive and negative, and that yes, we truly did want to say some negative things. The distinction between recruitment and selection, I think, is an important one, and I have heard folks in the last few years in child welfare sometimes refer to an RJP as a selection device. And technically speaking, it's not really correct. It is a recruitment strategy. I think where the confusion maybe comes in is when we're talking about recruitment, we're talking about things we do to attract the right candidates to the organization. And selection, we're talking about activities or processes for choosing from a pool of potential candidates. But for both of those things, there's an organizational side, and there's also the candidates or the applicants side. And for this activity in RJP, there is an element of candidate self-selection. You're encouraging the candidate to potentially self-select out of the hiring process. And so I think sometimes people think of this as a selection device, but strictly speaking, it really is a recruitment strategy. And there's a whole host of other things that you can and want to be doing during that selection phase. That really kind of goes beyond the purpose of today's call, but I'm hopeful we can have another call if there's interest about that. So we're really talking today about things you're doing during that recruiting phase where you're trying to attract candidates to the organization. There's a couple of important characteristics that sort of, typify or differentiate an RJP. One, it needs to convey accurate information. And you're conveying accurate information about some very specific topics, but also over a range of critical topics. If your RJP is not accurate, obviously it's not going to be effective, and I think that should be pretty obvious. Secondly, it needs to be credible. You're trying to change attitudes or confirm people's already held beliefs. And the credibility of the source of the message is going to come into play, and it is really important. And so if it's a video-based RJP, if the folks that people are seeing in the video don't portray that credibility, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot. So it's essential that the communication that you're offering be perceived as credible. And then the third is that it has to convey important information to the applicant. You're going to want to focus in on things that are important from the applicant's perspective to know about the job and the organization that may help them to decide if it's a good fit for them. So they would be aspects about which maybe the applicant lacks information or aspects that maybe an applicant would typically have concerns about. So those would be the kinds of things you want to be kind of zooming in on your RJP. As far as background, RJPs have, as I said on the handout, a long history of successful use, both in private and public sector kinds of organizations. It's only in the last, I don't know, since 1998, I guess, that child welfare organizations have been using them. But a number of businesses have been using them for many, many years. I mean, banks have been using them. I think I've seen reports back to the 50s. So it's by no means something new that we or anybody, you know, in child welfare has invented. This is a strategy that's been well-researched and we've known about for quite some time. What's interesting is the GAO did a report in March of 2003, and at that point, I'm not sure how many RJPs there were out in the country, but I know I was going around to conferences and talking about it quite a bit, and there were some staffers from the GAO that were in a presentation that I did, and I had an opportunity to sit down with them afterwards and kind of brief them on what were RJPs. And so I was really thrilled to see them cite that as a promising practice in their report in March of 2003. Since that time, and with the recruitment and retention training grants that number of folks, I think, on this call have been participating in those grants, that's provided an avenue, a funding stream for producing these RJPs. And so now we're seeing quite a number of child welfare agencies developing video-based RJPs. And I've named some of them there, and I know there's folks from some of those states on this call, and I'm sure there are others that I'm just not aware of. And I know there are a number of states, again, because I continue to get calls from folks in other states about, oh, well, what would it take for us to develop one? So I know there are a number of states out there that are right now considering developing them or are in the throes of the development process. There's a number of theories about how and why an RJP might work, and I think I won't maybe bore you with that unless people decide they want to talk more about that. There is a research literature on this, and if you're interested and so inclined, I would encourage you to to Google that, and you can find some things about how they might be theoretically working. And there's a lot of disagreement, just like a lot of other areas in our area. There's several meta-analyses, though, that you can dig up that look at the effectiveness of RGPs, and there's some very recent studies where folks are coming up with some new interesting findings about the effectiveness of RJPs. One that I saw recently that came out in, I think it was 2000, the last name is Meglino, they found that RJPs can be more effective in reducing turnover if the organization can restrict the exit of new employees for a period of time after the RJP. And that really rang a bell with me, because that to me sounded like what we have in child welfare with a 4E payback period when people are stipended and then they have to work in the agency for a number of years to pay back that investment. And I thought, you know, that's a corollary to what these folks are talking about. The research was not conducted in child welfare settings, but I thought that kind of research maybe was holding out some promise for consideration for RJPs in child welfare settings. I think that the important question, that one of the things I want you to come away from the call with, is when is an RJP indicated? If you're looking on your handout, this is on page 2. But I think that piece is especially important to talk about, because I fear that I'm seeing is that folks, there's a lot of interest right now, and RJPs are kind of hot or maybe a fad. And I see people maybe wanting to do them and maybe rushing to do it and not doing an adequate diagnosis of, well, is that the right intervention for our needs? And so I was hoping we could talk a little bit about that. I really believe an RJP is not for every situation, not for every organization. I think to be effective, it needs to be tailored to the specific need of the organization. And that means that a diagnosis, some sort of organizational diagnosis, has to be done to determine if it's a good fit. So not only does turnover have to be significant in your organization, and then of course we have to talk about what do you mean by significant? How much turnover means too much? Is it 20%? Is it 30%? Is it 50%? There isn't a hard and fast rule, but suffice it to say that if your turnover is really low, you're not going to see a big improvement with an RJP. So, you know, the more turnover you have, probably the more opportunity you have to make an improvement. But not only do you have to have significant turnover, the causes of turnover need to be due to candidates being misinformed or disillusioned with the job. It can't just be, oh, well, we have a lot of turnover, so we need an RJP. Well, you need to say, well, what kind of turnover do we have? And this, again, is why that diagnosis piece is so important. I would really recommend that you analyze the causes of your turnover. So who's leaving? Where are they going? Is it functional turnover or dysfunctional turnover? So and by that I mean, you know, if a poor performer leaves, hooray, that's a good thing. You want your poor performers to leave. You don't want them staying in the organization. So if that's the only kind of turnover you have, it's a different kind of question, and an RJP might not be the thing that you need to be looking at. You might be needing to look at, well, why are we hiring people who are going to ultimately be poor performers? Is it voluntary or involuntary turnover? So again, is it that the only kind of turnover you have, and of course I'm going to the extreme here, but if say the only turnover you had was people who are leaving, their spouse gets a job in another state and they have to go with them, or they've they graduate and they've gone into some other field. I mean, if that's the only kind of turnover, there's not maybe so much that the organization can do about it. If it's, however, voluntary turnover and you find that, gee, a lot of folks are leaving because they thought they were going to get to do counseling, or they thought they'd have a supervisor who would pay attention to them and give them feedback, and or, gee, they thought they were going to get to work with this specific client population and they're not. Those are kinds of things that are maybe miscommunications or misunderstandings that the applicants have that you can correct with an RJP. So that last point on there about expected benefits will outweigh the cost, I wanted to say a few words about that, because I think for our situation in Nebraska, that helped tremendously. We did a cost-benefit analysis and actually determined what the cost per turnover for each child welfare position that was turned over during the course of 1 year. And we costed that out. What all went into hiring a new person to replace that person, what went into training the person, and divided it out by how many turnovers we had. And so we had a dollar amount that it cost per turnover. Then when we said, well, maybe an RJP would help, and we had an estimate of what it would cost to develop the RJP, we could easily, or the agency, I guess, could easily assess, well, gee, the cost of developing the RJP was less than the cost of one turnover. So if it prevents just one person from taking the job and then quitting, and, you know, it was a mistake to even hire them in the first place, the thing has paid for itself. And so it was that kind of a thinking in terms of dollars that appealed to decision makers and made it actually a very easy sell. So if this is something that you're considering and you're maybe struggling with getting the attention of the key decision makers to kind of buy into it, you might think about that kind of an approach, that framing it in terms of the cost of turnover versus the benefit and the investment that would go into an RJP. In terms of benefits, you see a number of them listed there. And I want to just say the meta-analyses, the results are not uniformly positive, and you need to know that. This isn't a panacea. It's not going to solve all your problems. It's not going to cure all your turnover. I do think it will resolve the segment of your turnover that results from misinformation or unrealistic expectations, but it's not going to eliminate all your turnover. So you need to be really clear with people when you're communicating about, you know, hey, here's this idea, why don't we do this? You need to make sure that people understand it's not going to make all your turnover go away. A side benefit of the RJP that I think was not our main reason for developing one here in Nebraska, but was an added benefit, was improved public relations with applicants and with staff. I think the organization really took some steps forward in improving the way they were viewed by the public, because they're kind of putting out there some negative things. They're being honest. They're perceived as being honest with applicants, and I think people appreciate that. And staff also started using the RJP video when they would be called upon to give talks in the community, so that it wasn't even really the reason why we developed it, but they saw a need there that could be filled also by using this RJP video. So it actually got used in a number of ways beyond just for its intended purpose. The research about, okay, how if you say, okay, I want to develop an RJP, how do I go about doing it? When we were in that position in 1997, we, of course, turned to the research literature and said, oh, well, I'm sure there's an answer there, and someone has figured out what's the best process to use to develop an RJP. And we were distraught because we really didn't find much of anything. There was certainly no guidebook out there that you could just pick up and follow, you know, step by step like a cookbook. We gleaned from some of the research and some of the writings by John Wanis a number of points that you see listed on page 2 and the top of page 3. And I'm a real strong advocate of using a real structured approach to gathering the data about what things should be in the RJP. And we developed a process in Nebraska that we used that I think worked well. And then I've had the opportunity to subsequently use that same process in some work through the Butler Institute with the state of Arizona, where we created an RJP video for them. And I think we followed the same process, and I think it went really well. That gives me confidence that, that we must be onto something here with this process. The research you'll see advocates using a moderate rather than a high level of negativity in the information that you put in your RJP. And I just want to tell a really quick story about that I think is kind of funny. When we were set out to develop our RJP in Nebraska, again, I'd heard about them, but I had never developed one. And we thought, well, let's see some other RJPs as examples. And there were none in child welfare to look at, but we went to the Department of Labor Workforce Development Office here in Lincoln, and they had a number of videos from organizations that, you know, an applicant could come in and just watch these videos. And some of them were just informational videos, but there were a few that we thought, you know, these really are RJPs. One of them was by the Walmart Corporation, and there's nobody on here from Walmart, I hope. It was very, very positive, waved the flag. I mean, literally, there were flags flying, and it made it sound like such a wonderful place to work. There was one piece of negative information in the whole video, and it was buried really in the middle, and it basically told the applicant that, well, you'll need to take a drug test. But everything else in it was just glowing and wonderful, and it really kind of got you pumped up about working for Walmart. I'd say that really isn't an actual RJP because it really doesn't give you any nitty-gritty, dirty stuff about working for Walmart, and I'm sure there must be something. The second one that we watched had an opposite effect on me. It was Schneider Trucking Company, and I don't know if you've ever seen their trucks on the highways, but they're orange trucks, and we see them a lot here in Nebraska. I don't know if other parts of the country don't get them, but they had a three-hour, it was actually a set of two VHS tapes, and it lasted 3 hours, and it was videotaped interviews with truckers and their wives and families about the impact of the trucking experience on the family, and it showed their training program, and I mean, a lot of detail. Excessively negative. When I was done watching them, I mean, I was depressed for the rest of the day. I just felt so badly for those truckers, and I thought, oh my gosh, why would anyone take that job? It's just so difficult and so horrible. Again, maybe too much negativity. So getting it right, getting that sort of moderate level, not too negative, but negative enough, I think is truly an art. I think there's some science behind, you know, that you can use to inform that, but that's really where the art of it comes in, is getting the balance just right. Focusing intensively on key factors rather than attempting to provide all pertinent information about the job. I wanted to say a couple things about that because I've had the opportunity to see a number of RJPs now that are being developed in child welfare, and I think folks are doing a really great job, but I'm seeing they're long. Ours is pretty long, and I've seen ones that are even longer, and I thought ours was long. And I think folks are trying to put you know, everything but the kitchen sink in there. And I'm not sure, I guess I question whether that's effective or not, if an applicant can and will pay attention to, you know, that long of a show. And what are they really attending to when we give them more than 30 minutes worth of information? There's a couple other points there about the format of the RJP, and I guess there have been studies, the meta-analyses have looked at which is the most effective format. I personally really think the audiovisual format is effective, but I want to say that it does not need to be video-based to be effective. And if you find that, you know, you're in a crunched budget and you still want to do something with realistic recruitment, you could do an in-person conversation with an incumbent, sort of off the record, and I think it could be very effective. And I don't know if there's anybody here from Arizona on the call, but Arizona was using that piece as well. They developed an RJP video, but they also have a component where an applicant is given phone numbers and can call one of the frontline staff and have a conversation with them about, well, what is it really like? And I applaud that. I think it's a really novel and fabulous use of a different kind of resource, and you can maybe reach people in a different way. So I want to emphasize that it does not necessarily have to be a video that a high-budget production. Credibility, I've already said, is really important. So using actors, I think people can see right through that, and I think they see the genuineness when they can tell that it's real people who are really doing the work. And then providing judgmental rather than descriptive information about the job is really important. You're wanting to communicate to people, how does this feel? How does this good or bad thing feel to me? Rather than, oh, and the pay is, you know, $25 an hour and you get 2 weeks vacation. That's stuff they can get in a brochure. You don't need to be wasting valuable video time on that kind of stuff. It's more about conveying the feeling of the positive and negative events to the candidate. The rest of the handout focuses on specifics about how to develop an RJP. Then there's information about implementation, and I'm always wanting to give people free advice about how to implement and evaluate these things. And I'd be up for talking about any of that. But I guess at this point, I think I've probably yapped long enough, and maybe we should stop and see if there are questions or if people want to find out what people want to talk about.
Thanks, Michelle. This does seem like a good place to pause. Do folks have questions for Michelle?
Anybody there? Everyone has hung up now.
Right. We don't have exit tones either.
Right.
Michelle, this is Susan, and I do have a question based on what you've talked about. This has been very interesting because I, in my very limited, as I admitted, understanding of realistic job previews, assumed it was all video stuff. So to hear that there are other options is very enlightening for me.
Yeah. In the research literature, there's a number of studies where folks used brochures. You know, and I think you can kind of envision what that would look like, and you'd read, you know, read things about the job. And that would be another way to go. I'm not sure, you know, I don't know that anybody knows for certain if you developed your RJP, the same content, and used several different media for presenting it, you know, which would be more effective. I'm not sure if anyone has done that study, you know, that they've pitted them against each other. I think that'd be very cool to do. I don't have the time or the resources to do something like that. But I think, you know, I have teenagers, and I guess my thought is they seem to respond really well to the video and audio inputs, and they're all, you know, on YouTube and stuff. And I'm thinking, like, podcasts and stuff are probably the way to get through to them. If I hand them a book, they don't want to read it. And so I'm just thinking, I question whether the brochure approach will work with the young folks coming in. But that's just my totally impressionistic view. I don't know.
Now, can you talk a little bit about how a video or a preview would be used? I mean, you put an ad in the paper. That's part of how you try to recruit people. Then what happens? Do you know what I'm asking?
Yeah, in Nebraska, what we did was, and this is before the widespread use of the Internet for recruiting. And so I hopefully if there's someone from Arizona or maybe Charmaine can talk about what they're doing in Arizona, I can fill in a little bit on that. But in Nebraska, when we developed it in 97 and we implemented it in 98, they weren't doing applications online, and so putting the video online wasn't really an option. And so what we did was we actually had it was a whole bunch of videotapes, and we had, I think, a couple hundred of them that we made up, sent them out all around the state. And in the ad that was in the newspaper, an applicant would read, you know, a description of the opening, and it would say, applicants need to know that a video is required. You must view this video prior to completing the application. The videos can be found at, and it listed, you know, the local HHS offices, the Nebraska Workforce Development offices, public libraries, schools of social work. And so we had them in various places around, you know, around the state. And if an applicant couldn't go see it at one of those places, we also had a supply of them, and they would get mailed one. We'd just send it to them. Because you didn't want that to be the barrier to them not applying, you know, if they couldn't, or if they're in another state. We'd sometimes have applicants in other states that would be interested in Nebraska openings. They'd just mail them the video. And so they'd view the video. We had an evaluation piece that was attached to that where it was a little business reply postcard that they would complete after they did the video, and it came to me, so it wasn't part of their application process, but it was a way for us to kind of get perceptions of folks who viewed the video. And then they proceeded on in the application process and the interview process. We had to have a little check and balance there because, as it turned out, folks would kind of not watch the video, and then they'd, you know, they'd do the application, and then they'd get invited for an interview, and sometimes folks wouldn't have watched the video. And so we built in a little checkpoint there where if they were invited for an interview for an opening, they were asked if they had viewed the video. And if they said no, they hadn't, they had to watch it before they went into their interview. Now, I was pleased that they were at least watching it, but at that point I figured it's not going to do much good because they've already psychologically invested in the process, and I'd never heard of a candidate who watched the video and then said, oh, I'm not going to have my interview. I mean, they're there for an interview, you know. So it was sort of, it was too late at that point. But ideally, and the way it is in Arizona now, it's online. And my understanding is applicants have to go to the website and view the video and can't even complete their application online until they've viewed the video. And so that's ideal because they've had zero investment in the process. They can easily opt out. And the agency hasn't invested anything in the applicant. And so that's the optimal timing, if you ask me, because both parties, there's been no investment, and you know they can easily opt out without, they don't lose face, and they haven't really invested anything. Now the challenges of putting it up on a website are different than, you know, if you're putting together a VHS video or a DVD. When it's up on the web, as we learned in Arizona, and again, if there's someone on from Arizona, please speak up here. You have to have the right bandwidth, and what if people don't have a fast enough internet connection so they can't download it, and so they had to set it up so it streams sort of as you're watching it. So there's a whole host of technical questions that are well beyond me. And then you do have the question of, well, what if someone doesn't have internet access? What do they do? Do you want to have a supply of DVDs that have been burned so that you could hand it out to people? And I think that is what they ended up doing. So it's tricky no matter which way you decide to distribute it, but you need to think through all of that because, like I said earlier, the last thing you want is for this to be a barrier for a good applicant, you know, to applying just because they can't access this video.
This is Charmaine. And,
Charmaine.
We are working with Arizona. So you put out a lot of stuff out there about Arizona. So I thought maybe I'd comment a little bit about it.
Sure.
First of all, I want to say that Arizona loves their video, and it has really done quite a lot to assist the state in recruitment. It's also done a lot in terms of that PR aspect as far as letting other community providers know what they do. So that's been very helpful. It has worked really well, actually, I think better than they anticipated as far as having it on the website.
Great.
But, unfortunately, it's not a requirement.
This is Susan. We're having a fire truck going by. That'll pass in a minute. Sorry.
Anyway, that's okay. They haven't been able to make it a requirement before filling out the online application.
Okay.
They wanted to do that, but it just hasn't happened that way. The other piece that they have tried to do with kind of mixed success is to have an evaluation component where people can click on a brief survey to find out if they change their mind about applying for the job once they saw the video. But the technology on that hasn't particularly worked very well. So that's a kink to be worked out and a good lesson, I think, for other states to think about how that information is going to be collected, where it gets collected, and where does it go to.
Right.
But the other thing that Arizona has done is they've had those people available at the agencies who would also be available for phone calls. And
I think
that's the secondary thing that has been helpful. So people really do have a good understanding of what they're getting into beyond what's in the video.
Michelle, thank you, Charmaine. That was really helpful. And I was going to say that, this is Susan, I had received an email from Holly Sanger, who was your contact, I believe, in Arizona. And she was desperately going to try to be on this call because she wanted to say positive things about the work that was done there and the benefits. And so obviously she hasn't made it yet, but she still might join us.
Great. I just wanted to add something about evaluation. I hope nobody was thinking that I was putting down the Arizona. I think they did a marvelous effort. And the evaluation piece is I have a section on here about how to know whether it's made a difference. And that's always been my frustration, is not being able to do a really, really great evaluation of the impact of an RJP. And I think that's true of, you know, in the research literature too. You don't see a whole lot of really good studies of RJP effectiveness, and it's because it's tough to do. Plus, I think you've invested so much time and effort into doing it. The last thing, at least here in Nebraska, the last thing anybody wanted to talk about was, oh, well, let's have an area that's a control comparison group that won't get the RJP so that you can do your little evaluation. They didn't want to hear about it. And so when we developed it, they said, no, statewide implementation immediately. So I had this whole evaluation plan where we could, you know, compare to folks who were hired without it, and they had no interest in that. And so the only two evaluation pieces that we were able to do here in Nebraska, the first was more of a, you might call, a manipulation check, where we had a class, several classes of social work, child welfare social work students, and we did a little survey about their perceptions of public child welfare and the child protection positions and whether they're interested, et cetera, and their knowledge of the position. And they did that survey, they watched the video in their class, and then we had them do a post, the same survey post. And so we were basically comparing pre-post perceptions and knowledge. And what we found is that it sort of polarized, watching the video sort of polarized people and their opinions about working in public child welfare positions. So if they initially were sort of, I'm not so sure, probably not, watching the video made them real sure they didn't want to work in it. And the converse, you know, if they were initially maybe thinking, yeah, I might want to do public child welfare, watching the video sort of solidified it for them and made them even more want to see it, go into it. So I thought, hey, that's good. That's what we want. We want it to sort of make people strengthen their positive or negative feelings about going into this work. Our other small evaluation effort was the postcards that I referred to earlier, where everybody in the state of Nebraska who watched the RJP got this little, it was a little business reply postcard that came to me, and we did this for, oh, probably 5-6 years, and it was anonymous. So I had no way of tracking whether they ultimately did apply for the job, but it tapped into, you know, before you watch this video, what did you think about? And it tapped into a number of things, their knowledge about a number of aspects of the job. And the final question was, now that you've seen this video, will you continue in the application process, yes or no? And every one of those postcards that came to me that said no was somebody who they probably would have ended up hiring had it not been for the video. And so I counted those all as successes. Now, the total number of those, I mean, it was maybe 5-10%. I mean, so it's not huge. But like I said, every one of those would probably have been people that, you know, the agency would have hired. And so I can't say for sure that it impacted turnover. What I do know is that the agency, we used it for 8 years, and we stopped using it in 2005 because it was desperately out of date. Not only fashions and people's eyeglasses and hairstyles, but the content of the job had changed substantially, and we decided, you know, it doesn't work anymore. And so the agency pulled it. And I can say that the turnover since they've pulled it till now seems to be substantially higher, but I can't attribute it to them not using the RJP, because obviously there's a number of other economic and organizational factors, you know, at play. So I don't know. I hope others who have had the opportunity to develop them in child welfare can do some really good evaluations of them. I think it's a thing that's sorely needed, but it's difficult to get that commitment for the kind of evaluation study that would really tell us, you know, if the RJP itself is contributing to reduction in turnover.
Michelle, this is Greg from Seattle.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, what sort of feedback from the union have you gotten regarding this new recruitment strategy?
No particular feedback. The it's not something it's a pre-hire strategy, so I don't really know how the union has anything to do with it.
Okay.
Tell me, I'm not sure I'm following. What would be their connection to it?
No, I was just curious on, you know, what they think about it.
Yeah. That they hadn't weighed in on it at all.
Okay. Thanks.
Are there other questions for Michelle at this point?
This is Frida. Hi, Michelle.
Frida?
Thank you. It's always so wonderful to hear you talk about this. You're
well,
so
you have much to say as well. So.
Well, I have a little bit to add. I was pleased to hear you talking about the fact that an RJP is not just a video, because I think that we're getting into that mindset in child welfare.
Yes.
And you're probably aware there's a book by Larson and Hewitt.
Yes.
Which is really good. It's a book on recruitment and retention strategies for community human services personnel. And the authors talk about, you know, a lot of different approaches, including meetings with current staff, as you said, you know, photograph albums, booklets or brochures, web-based multimedia presentations, and internships or volunteer programs.
Uh-huh.
And I think we often don't think about an internship as a realistic job preview. But it really is, and I think that there are ways in which you can structure an internship experience in a way that helps the intern make a more informed decision and the organization make a more informed decision about whether it's the right job for them.
Definitely. Are you doing something specific in that area? I know you have a video also, but are you also doing?
We have a video, and we also organized unpaid internships and have a manual to help supervisors with interns. But another point that Larson and Hewitt make, which I think is a really good one, is that if you're a small organization with a limited budget, then you might want to think about using a sort of hybrid approach and having like an industry, they call it an industry-specific video.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, one of the thoughts that I've had is that different states are producing their own RJP video, but the job of a child welfare caseworker is very similar throughout the country. And potentially, you know, there could be one video that's produced, and then different agencies could have brochures or, you know, more specific information about their organization that they could use to supplement that.
I totally agree, and great minds think alike here, Frida, because we're redoing our Nebraska one, and one of our thoughts was, well, maybe we can make it, I don't want to say generic, but I guess it, along the lines of what you're talking about, make it so that it maybe could apply to more than just Nebraska, and then another agency that maybe would be interested could purchase it and either use it the way it is or add on a segment that's more unique to their specific agency. So we're trying to play with that idea and see what it would take to build one that doesn't lose its effectiveness. You know, you don't want to water it down so much that it doesn't help at all, but something that targets things that are commonalities, and, but yet so that another state might be able to just maybe pick it up and use it or modify it very slightly. There have been a couple of states recently that we've had conversations with, and it didn't work out to actually just partner with them to build a joint video, but it got me thinking that maybe that's the way to go, to create something that, you know, once it's done, we could say to other states, you know, we've got this, and you know, it wouldn't take much for you to modify it, or it's, you could use it the way it is.
Yeah.
Folks in Georgia, Bert Ellett in Georgia, before they were creating theirs, I think there was some interest in using Nebraska's there, and I said, you know, that would just, to me, that would be confusing as an applicant to view one that says Nebraska, and we've got pictures of cows in ours,
right.
And I just thought, I don't know how that would go over
well,
in another state, but I think you could build one that maybe could hit on those critical pieces that are commonalities, like you said, Frida, and maybe be usable in more than just one agency. So we're looking at trying to figure out a way to do that here.
I think that's a great idea, and that would be a very useful resource.
Can I weigh in on that? This is Charmaine.
Hi, Charmaine.
Hi, and I totally agree. There are so many more similarities than differences across the country.
Yeah.
That said, We're doing one in Colorado right now, and we're working with counties all over the state. And the process itself is wonderful, just in terms of allowing people to weigh in on what's important about
yeah.
their job. So there's it's not that much money, but the value in terms of the process
yeah.
Might be, according to a MasterCard commercial, priceless.
Yeah.
And to have the caseworkers participate in the actual making of the film.
Oh, absolutely.
It really does wonders as far as buoying, I think, just goodwill for the department, because
yeah.
people are so pleased that the department is doing this for them, because sometimes they don't often see that the State Department does a lot, and this is a real positive thing. The people who are involved in this process, unlike some advisory committee meetings, are enthusiastic about being there, are
yeah.
thrilled to be there, and it's a time-limited effort. So in all of the committees that I've been involved with in the past in my career, this has been one of the most positive ones. So I would definitely weigh in on having this as part of a process.
Yeah.
That's my 2 cents worth.
Now is a good time for other questions, comments, sharing. Are any states or counties, any agencies that are on the phone, have you been thinking about using realistic recruitment as a strategy? And if you are, tell us where you are in that process. Are you in the early phases? Do you need some advice? We got some people on the phone that have done this and done it well. Are you needing some marketing, some pep up, some advice to overcome barriers?
This is Reba from Utah, and we have a recruitment and retention work group that has this on our radar. And I think what was important early on in the call was just really finding out, is it cost effective for us to do a realistic job preview, and is it really going to target the kind of turnover that we're getting?
Yes.
So I think that's the first step for us.
Yep.
And this is Calvin from Pennsylvania, and I know that our State Civil Service Commission developed a video similar to what you're talking about several years ago here. I'm pretty sure it's still accessible on the website. I guess the part I'm wondering about, I really haven't heard much about it since it was developed. So I don't, and John, maybe you know more about this, but I don't know if there was ever anything built in when it was developed to, you know, determine the impact that it would have.
Well, I'll jump in. I was trying to find the right area to throw this in when we were talking about the videos that cut across maybe the country. The Pennsylvania video was developed not just for children and youth, but it was looking at kind of the county caseworker job, that classification.
Mm-hmm.
So it does have a focus of child welfare, but it also talks about mental health and other kind of county caseworker job as a job preview. But I know that Pennsylvania has used it whenever, as a state, there's been some job fairs at different colleges and what have you, and just have it playing it there and have people watching it. And I think it's really just available to the counties. We do have it on our website, and if you want, Susan, I could just send you a link. I don't know if you want to collect everybody's and let people see them or that, but I could send you a link to our video if people wanted to see it.
I would be very happy to get that information, and if I receive it from any other state or county, I will email it out to the whole group. So thank you.
Susan?
Yes.
Hi, this is Frida again. In terms of resources, the Cornerstones for Kids website has a couple of publications on there that people might find useful. One is a review of the literature on realistic job previews and child welfare, and the other is a realistic job preview toolkit. And it has some examples of from Michigan, Nebraska, and I think one other state, and has sort of step-by-step procedures for how you can go about developing one.
Great. Thank you, Frida. That's very helpful. Other questions, comments, suggestions?
I'll jump in with a question, if that's all right. This is John Rubin again from Pennsylvania. And this time I did remember to unmute, right? You're there?
Yes, we're here. We can hear you, John. Good, loud and clear.
I guess I just wanted to go back to the idea about when you would show the video. I gathered before that you were pretty clear that you felt like it really should be showed. Somebody should view it before even making the decision about applying for the position. But that said, if that didn't happen, it's still worth showing it to them. I guess I wanted to clarify when you were saying that when people come to the office for the interview, for them to see it at that point, you don't see it as effective because they've already kind of invested in coming to the interview, and they're not going to have an honest response to it. Is that what I gathered?
I guess if I had my choice, I'd have them view it before they even put their pen to the application. But what ended up happening here in Nebraska was that, you know, obviously wasn't always the case, and so the agency felt like, well, we're going to require everyone to view this video before they get hired, and so if they haven't seen it when they come to the interview, we're going to make sure they see it, you know, before their interview. And I didn't, you know, I said, well, that's fine, but don't expect that that's going to have as big of an impact as if they're more free to remove themselves from the situation earlier on in the process. I have no factual information about, oh, you know, this changed or didn't change people's opinions about the job. That's just my impression of, you know, think about when you go for a job interview, if you would you actually have the nerve to turn around and say, I don't want it, you know, now that I've seen this video. I think some applicants might, but I think it would be more of a challenge to opt out at that point. Giving them things to think about, and so, you know, the whole point of this is to deflate their expectations so that when they take the job, their naive initial expectations about, you know, how wonderful it's going to be aren't kind of shot down when they meet the reality of the work. And so doing something before the interview is probably better than doing nothing. Mm-hmm. So I guess on the continuum there, it's probably better than not doing anything with them. But I guess in terms of maximum effectiveness, I would think that the earlier on would be the better. There's some research on that, and I don't have that in front of me, but I think if you look for the meta-analyses, Phillips has one, and more recently there's one by Meglino and some, I think, Denisi and some other folks. And I think some of those meta-analyses might address that, so you could look at that.
I have no research on the subject.
Okay.
It seemed to me that it would be an opportunity for the interviewer to talk about the realistic preview with the applicant.
Yeah, it would.
And so they kind of process it then with what was it that concerns you most about it, and
sure,
and just kind of have it as part of a discussion as opposed
sure.
to them.
Sure, you know, and there's real life people there that you can follow up with, of
Great.
Course. Our interview process in Nebraska is highly structured, and so that wouldn't happen during the interview, but certainly, you know, folks after the interview could converse about if the applicant had questions that were raised during the video. So,
okay. Thank you.
Rita, this is Susan. In Maine, when in the process is our video available?
We have DVDs.
Yes.
That are mailed out when the panel interview is scheduled. So after people have applied, their name goes on the register, and they get an appointment for a panel interview, which is the first interview in the process. So the DVD is mailed out at that point, and they're asked to view it before coming in for the interview. If they come in for the interview and haven't seen it, we've asked the offices to make sure that they see it, or actually to clarify, the letter says, you know, either watch it at home or come in half an hour early for the interview, and you can see it in the office. However, we still find, and we all deal with the realities of life, that some people show up to pre-service and have not seen the RJP. So as our default, we do show it on the first at lunchtime on the first day of pre-service to anyone who has not seen it.
Ah, okay. Multiple uses, multiple opportunities
right.
to see it. Yeah. Yep. Thank you. I'm going to ask Michelle in a minute or so to give us some wrap-up thoughts.
Oh, my. Okay.
But before you do that, Michelle, you have some time to pull a few together. This is the last call for questions, comments. Obviously, we have several resources on this call, as always, which is wonderful. So any last questions or ideas that you'd like to share with the group or get some advice from the group on?
Susan, this is Frieda again, just throwing in my two cents to reinforce what Michelle's been talking about in terms of having a realistic process. You know, that I think that trying to reframe it in terms of it's not just a video that's presenting a realistic job preview, but all the materials in the recruitment process through the screening process are a way of providing a realistic view of the job to an applicant, so that the goal is that you have people with all of the information so that they can make an informed decision, you know, which is something I know that Michelle has reinforced over the years.
Thank you, Frieda. And that gets us to, again, still giving Michelle a couple of minutes to think about what she wants to just give us as her final remarks. Michelle started off this conversation by saying that she was going to be focusing on recruitment, and there are, and Frieda's brought this to our attention again, selection and hiring procedures that are part of the full package. Can I have a sense of the group, if you would like to have the next call, continue on with this topic, but focus in now on screening and selection?
I'm really interested. This is Reba from Utah. Our group is interested in exit interviews and stay interviews. So we're doing exit interviews, and we've done a few stay interviews, but we don't have a process or structure for stay interviews.
Okay. So there's one vote for doing something around the idea of screening, selection, and then if people are leaving, what do you do as they're exiting? Okay? What's the sense of the rest of the group? Just a few yeses. Is this a good topic to continue on with?
Yep.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Yep.
Okay. So, with that said, let me say, Michelle, what would you like to, you got a couple of minutes. What do you want to drive home for us? And maybe, I mean, I was just looking ahead in your handout. Maybe it's the lessons learned.
That was all I was going to say is there's a few, you know, free advice, take it for what it's worth there, about lessons learned. And this is just based on my personal experience. Now I'm working on my third RJP, and I think what I've seen is if you don't have a champion in upper management, it's really hard to get this done because it requires coordination across multiple functional areas, you know, HR and your IT person and the child welfare program staff, the field staff that maybe that need to be in the video. I mean, it requires a lot of coordination and people working together, and without that top management support, you're not going to – I haven't been able to get going on it. We've really liked having a planning team both here in Nebraska and in the Arizona project that Butler Institute coordinated. There was a nice planning team that made a lot of recommendations and decisions and kind of was the people that was most intimately involved in determining the content, and that's worked really well for us. The information technology staff, you need to involve them from the beginning, especially if you're thinking about putting it up on your internet website. There's just too much involved there that is probably beyond something that you personally know about. I know that's true for me, that you have to involve those folks so that you get the parameters as you're developing the project. Knowing your audience, to me, that's coming home again and again. It's like who's your applicant pool, and who are the people you're trying to attract to the organization, and you need to speak, you know, the language that they understand. Again, thinking about my own, you know, teens and 20-year-old kids, I know what they listen to and the way they communicate, and the way I would tend to communicate to them is going to turn them off. So I think you have to kind of think about your audience. The next one, I didn't really talk about this too much, but using a video producer that's familiar with child welfare and hopefully somebody that knows something about RJPs, I think would be really helpful. We had a not so great experience here in Nebraska when we first got started because they just didn't know what an RJP was, and they weren't getting the idea of the need to present negative information. And so we ultimately used them to do the camera work and use their facility for the editing, but we wrote the whole script and designed all the shots ourselves because the first draft was not turning out the way it needed to look. And so we had to be intimately involved in the production, much more so than we ever anticipated. And that there's a steep learning curve. I really do think that, you know, the folks on the call that have also produced one would probably say the same thing, that after doing one, then you say, oh, I wish I'd known that at the beginning. So if you find yourself in the position of having to develop one, I'd recommend you look for some assistance with somebody who's done it before. So, and Susan, ours is not up on any website, but I still have DVD copies of it, and if anybody is interested in seeing it, it is dated, but it would be another one to look at if folks want to see a copy of it. I could send whoever a copy if they're interested.
Excellent. And your contact information is on your handout, Michelle,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
That's how they would get in touch with you. Thank you. That's a very generous offer. I suspect people will follow up with that.
Sure.
Well, this has been amazingly informative to me, and I'm sure to everyone else on the call. I want to thank you, Michelle, for volunteering to do this. I feel like I have much better sense of this area than I did an hour ago, so I really appreciate that. And I must thank Charmaine and Frida for jumping in and sharing their wisdom and expertise also,
yes.
And everyone else who joined. This has really been a very informative call. And Michelle, I'll be in touch with you and Megan.
Okay.
Or maybe some conversation about the next steps in this process. I think that would be a really nice continuation. We usually do our calls quarterly, so we will be looking to schedule something in April for folks, and I think this has just been wonderfully helpful. Thank you all for joining the call.